Okay, we're up and running. Good morning, everybody. Thank you for coming. We are moving towards Pesach, but before we get completely into Pesach mode, because I know it's a bit stressful for people, so you have 1 week of reprieve. This week we're not talking about Pesach issues, but from next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, for the 3 weeks leading up to Pesach, I would like to talk about Pesach Minhagim. Next week I'd like to start with Kidniot, everybody's favorite. The week after I'd like to go further into Gebroch. Everyone's even more of a favorite, and then move on from there. But quite frankly, today's shiur is nothing to do with Pesach, but it is to do with Minhag, which is a surprise to some people. It's a difficult topic, it's a sensitive topic, and it's a tricky topic, and I think it's a much misunderstood one. And I'd like to explain to you today why I think Minhag has a very big part to play in this. As we get through the sources, we'll see how that works. And this is the issue of tzniut. Tzniut is a very difficult word to define. Modesty is a poor attempt at a definition. Dignity is part of it as well. Privateness, maybe, if that's a word, may be part of it as well. But we'll see that actually the application of minhag in tzniut in practice is very minhag connected. One of the difficulties of tzniut is that there are at least six different sugyas, six different issues in halacha, which all interact with each other when dealing with issues of tzniut. And people don't always realize that, and it becomes a bit of a challenge, and everything becomes interconnected with everything else. And of course they are connected, but you have to understand them separately. We're not going to speak about them all. I have on my website, a series, a course, a three shirim, dealing with these issues in more detail. And you can always look at that if you wish. But today, really, I'm focusing more on the minhag issue. What are the sugyas, what are the issues in halacha that go into a discussion about tzniut? Well, first of all, there's the mitzvah d'oraita of tzniut, which we're going to start with today and talk about a little bit. One of the 613 mitzvot is the mitzvah of tzniut, according to at least some of the Rishonim. We'll have to look at what that is. Tzniut basically is an issue of self-respect. It's got nothing to do with gender specifically or sex, male or female. It's just to do with a person's self-image, and it's Paskin in Shulchan Aruch at the very beginning, and also then in Reish Mem and in Evan Ha'ezer. Then there's the issue of tzniut in public, which is the more minhag-oriented one, which we're going to look at. That is based on a different discussion, a Gemara in Sota, a Gemara in Subas, and it's Paskin in different places in Evan Ha'ezer. The first sugya is more of the inside tzniut, inside the house and inside the person, and the other is more of the outside. Then there's an entirely separate sugi which deals with the concept of erva. Erva is where there are parts of people's body that are showing which have an impact on what other people can do. Erva is principally an issue which is related to men. Okay, if there are women who are not dressed in a way that halakhically they should be, then there may be occasions where men are not allowed to say brachot, even when women are not allowed to say brachot, depending on how undressed the person really is, but where someone can't say a brachot or daven, etc., etc. It's very important and much misunderstood in my experience that people confuse tzniut and erva. Tzniut is not a set of halachas which are designed to get people to cover up erva. That's not what it's all about. Erva is a product of tzniut, meaning when people are not dressing in a way that the halacha says they should, that might lead to an issue of erva. It's that way around rather than the other. We're not really going to talk about erva. It's a separate sugya. It's beyond the scope of what we can talk about today. But it's very important for people to understand, especially for women, especially for young women to understand, which I think this topic is taught rather badly often in high schools, that tzniut is not about covering up because you're covering up issues of erva. It's about more of an internal dignity issue, which we'll see as we go through. Then there are issues of lifnei iver, which we're not going to talk about today, which is if a person behaves in a way that they're not meant to and causes other people to do averas, is that their responsibility? And the answer is, yes, it is, but that's not specifically a tzniut sugya. Lifnei iver relates to any situation where a person puts another person in a compromising situation. There's a discussion, when we did the Bein Adam L'Chaveru series, we had a discussion about this, and we talked about, are you allowed to invite people to your home if they're going to drive on Shabbat? Or are you asking them to do a Neveira and drive on Shabbat? Are you allowed to give people food if you know they're not going to make brachot? I'm not getting into the issues here. We talked about that in some detail. But similarly, there is a lifnei iver point here too. If people are going to dress, specifically if women are going to dress in a way which is provocative and inconsiderate in that way, then that could have a litanative or effect on the men. But again, that is not the root of tzniut. That's very important. And again, I think a mistake that people are making when they teach this issue, again, especially to young women, is to give them the impression that tzniut is about covering up so that they don't make the men do aveirus. That's not what it's all about. That is a side issue, which is a bein adam l'chaveiro issue, which a person has to be sensitive to. But that is not really what tzniut is about. Again, we're not talking much about that today, but that's an important point. And finally, there's the issue of ahavat reyim, of the ahavta l'reicha kamocha, that when anyone deals with these issues, there has to be sensitivity. There has to be sensitivity on the part of men when they discuss these issues with women. There has to be sensitivity on the part of women when they go to places where others are more sensitive to certain styles of dress. It almost goes without saying, but it needs to be said. The ahavta l'reicha kamocha is an extremely important central mitzvah, and the way that you deal with these particular issues is no less part of that whole framework. I remember once I took a group of young men and young women on a Kiruv trip to the Kotel Friday night many years ago. These were people who were not particularly religiously observant. This was their first major Shabbat experience. It was very exciting for them. The girls, of course, were on the women's side of the plaza there, dancing and singing Kabbalat Shabbat. And I was on the men's side next to the mechitza. And there was a chap in front of me started throwing water onto my students from his water bottle. At first I thought he was having a funny turn. I didn't know what was exactly going on with this fellow. So I said to him, is everything okay? He goes, no, everything's not okay. I said, well, could you please stop throwing water over my students? So he said, he got very upset with me, and he said, I should be throwing chairs, I should be throwing tables. He had this conversation with me. I said, why? He says, because they're making noise, and it's not sanua. I said, okay, fine, I'm not interested in having a conversation about New York with you right now, but you should not be throwing chairs or tables, and don't throw water, please, either. And it was just a basic lack of Derech Eretz in how to deal with the situation. I understand maybe a little bit what his concern and sensitivity was, but the way to do it is not to throw things at people. That doesn't really achieve very much in my experience. He did stop. I think he ran out of water. I'm not sure my conversation had any impact at all. but thank God he didn't have access to chairs and tables. Okay, so what are we really talking about? How should this be addressed? So I think the first issue which I want to deal with, in short really, because I want to get to the minhag angle, is where is the Torah source for tzniut? Where is it discussed? And the answer is in a fascinating place. If you look at number one, there's a sugi in Devarim, there's a discussion there in the sugi in Devarim, if people are in a war scenario. And it says as following, number one, yad v'yad tiyel acha michutz l'machaneh. You have to have an appointed place. A yad is a special place appointed for a reason, as in Yad Vashem, the yad is the place which is there. You have to have a place outside your machaneh. And when you need to go to the bathroom, you've got to go outside there. It's not always straightforward in an army scenario how you're going to use the bathroom. I'm not getting into these details, and I've never been in a situation like that myself. But, you know, guys who are stuck in tanks for 3-4 days or whatever at the front, these are logistics that have to be worked through. And the Torah wants to work through these logistics as well. You have to have an appointed place. You have to have a little shovel on your kit, says the Torah. When you need to go to the bathroom, you'll go outside, you'll dig a little hole. And then you'll cover up. Meaning you will take your personal dignity seriously, even in an extreme scenario, like a war scenario, where, God forbid, who knows who's even going to be alive in 5 minutes from now, and you might say, well, who cares what I do with the bathroom? No, the Torah says there is, keep the battlefield bathroom clean is part of the personal dignity. Why? And this is a key point. Because you have to be aware of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in your presence, in your machaneh. He's saving you, and he's giving your enemies over to you. I am machanecha kadosh. You have to keep your machaneh kadosh. There shouldn't be anything vulgar or inappropriate here with you. Why? Because that will turn God away from you. This idea of being aware and conscious of being in the presence of Hashem is a very, very complex one. It's not just about an eye in the sky looking down on us. That's more of a pagan kind of feeling. It's much more of a personal awareness of this in a person's life. Oh, we'll get to that right now. The next part of the discussion before we get to your question is the mention of tzniut explicitly, which is in Micha, which is perhaps more famous. There is no mention of tzniut in the Torah explicitly, in the word tzniut, but in Micha it comes up in a famous line. Number two, v'higidlecha adam, matay, let me tell you, says Micha, what is good in life? Ma Hashem doresh mimcha. What does God want of us in this world? Ki amasot mishpat, he wants us to be fair, a people, honest people, ahavat chesed, kind people, and helpful people, v'hatznei alechet im elokecha, and people who walk with tzniut, with Hashem. Again, this is addressed to all people, maybe even all human beings, not just all Jewish people, but certainly all the Jewish people. So hatznei alechet is part of this triumvirate, these three principles of being honest and being kind and being tsanua. What does that mean, being tsanua? So the Masudat Tzion comes in immediately and says, Lalechet im elokecha b'darchei mitzvotav, the way we do mitzvot, the way we walk with Hashem, is b'tzina. Lo b'pirsum rav, not in great public fanfare, ulehit yaher, and not in a way which is arrogant. Meaning, the idea that less is more, which some people don't always get, okay? And more is not necessarily more, is part of the concept of tzniut. And again, Micha is not addressing himself directly to see the way people dress specifically. He's addressing himself to the way people act, in the way they do mitzvahs, in the way they make weddings, in the way they behave in life generally. And the Sefer Mitzvot Katan, and here's your point, picks up on this, on the Balei HaTosfot written by Rav Yitzchak Korbei, and he picked the smack. There's the smag, which is the Sefer Mitzvot Gadol, and the smack, which is the Sefer Mitzvot Katan. So the smack picks up on this in number three, and he says as follows. One of the 613 mitzvahs is lihiyot tzanua, to be tzanua. Dichsiv, and he quotes from Dvarim, because he can't quote from Micha and make that one of the 613, because Micha's in Micha. He says, v'haya mechanech hakodesh, keep the battlefield bathroom clean, be aware of your dignity, even in those extreme scenarios. V'hatznei alechesim elokecha. And then he quotes the pasuk from Micha. V'ram chachamim, ein tzanua, what ultimately is tzniut, he says, ela shehav tzanua bebeit hakisei. Tzniut here, in terms of the Torah mitzvah, is private. In the most private places, how do we behave when nobody's there, when nobody's watching, when nobody will know? That's the point here of tzniut. How do we behave in the bathroom? And also he says at the end here, v'gam kein b'dava, tzarech liot b'tzniut, sorry, I missed up a bit, wait one second, v'gam b'tash mishamita, and also in the bedroom, tzarech liot tzanua, a person has to be tzanua, v'gam b'kol dava, tzarech liot b'tzniut, v'lot b'pritzut. And therefore, this is brought down as the basic, fundamental din of tzniut, that we should never turn around and say, nobody's watching, who cares? And this is brought down in the Shulchan Aruch, in the very beginning of the Shulchan Aruch, where the remark comes in and says, Shvisi Hashem le-Negdi Tamid, key number five. He passes this halacha as follows. Shvisi Hashem le-Negdi Tamid, that a person should always be aware of being in front of Hashem, who cloud gadol b'Torah b'malas ha-tzadikim. This is a very important principle in Torah and the way that a person should behave if they wish to be a tzadik. Asher olchim lifnei elokim. They should always be conscious of walking before God. And then he goes on and talks about the fact that the way we behave when we're on our own is not always the way we behave when we're in front of a melech gadol. And the way we speak when we're in front of close friends and family isn't the way we speak when we're in front of a melech gadol. And it says, kal v'chomer, just pick it up maybe, the third line down, Kol shekei kashiyasim ha'adam, alibo shehamelech ha'gadol, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Hashem, melech al ha'aretz kvado. When we put into our minds that Hashem, who is present in all things in life, Omed Allah, is standing over us, v'roi b'ma'asav. And again, I think it's not just a question of thinking about God watching us, but us being conscious of God in our lives. Kamosha ne'emar, imi satay ish b'mestarim, v'ani lo yirena, nu ma'ashem, he quotes from Yirmiyahu, does God not see even in the dark? Miyad yagir alav hayir v'hachna, a person will then achieve a sense of awe and hachna and submission, b'pachad and awareness here, Hashem, and even fear of Hashem, u'boishto mimenu tamid. And then he says, v'gam hatznei alechet, and also to walk with tzniut, u'v'shichbo al mishkavo, when you lie in your bed, yeda, you should know, lifnei mi hu shochev, in front of who you're lying. And now is not the time to have a whole conversation about this, but in terms of the inner life of tzniut, it's important to ask, how does one take a shower, lifnei Hashem? That's what he's challenging us to think. How does one go to bed, lifnei Hashem, and walk around the house, lifnei Hashem? And that's why these dinim come out in Shulchan Aruch in 6 and 7, very much in the private places. And the Mishnah Berurah brings down that this is one of the dinim of one of the 613 mitzvahs. A somewhat amusing but very pertinent Gemara in number 8. The Gemara says in Brachas, Ahu Sastana, who was a fellow giving a hesped. Hespedim are very interesting. No one ever says negative things in Hespedim. I said that's not entirely true. In the United States Synagogue in London, they had to actually ban people from giving Hespedim other than the rabbis, because people had been a bad history of people standing up and saying highly inappropriate things at funerals about, well, you think he was a nice guy, but I know that. One of my friends who, and this is very difficult for the rabbis, of course, because the rabbis have to give Hespedim about people they don't really know anything about. This is a true story. One of my friends who was a junior rav went to a family, obviously, you know, distressed at a bereaved family at a funeral, and he said, look, I'm going to give a husband for your husband, for your father. Is there anything particularly you think that I ought to say about him, that he was in life? And they looked at him and he said to my friend, he hated men with beards. My friend's there with a long... Is that it? Oh, and he watched a lot of TV. Okay. So he has to stand up and give a hesped. He talked about how he was very particular about facial hygiene. And he, there's a way to spin it. Anyway, it's not always so posh. Hespedim are not very pshutim. And the Gemara here points that out. Hahu Saftana. There was a guy giving a hesped. Nochis kameh to Rav Nachman. And he was in front of Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman was at the Levaya. Amar, he said, in Brogmar and Brochas, Hai tsanua ba'or chasav hava. This man was so tsanua. He says about the nifta, about the person who passed away. He was so tsanua. So afterwards, Amar loy Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman goes up to him and says to him, excuse me, Atalit v'hadela beis akise. Did you ever go to the bathroom with us? V'yadati tsanua ilo? How do you know if he was tsanua? Oh, when he was in public, he walked around with his shemona begadim or whatever. Very nice. That's not really what it's all about. It's what it's all about when he thinks there's nobody there. Hinenei ani b'chadri chadorim mira'eni, as the Shulchan Aruch paskens, what do people do when there's nobody there? The Tanya, as it says, ein korin tanu, you can only call someone tanua, ela lemisha tanua b'beis akisi. Now, I'm not getting into this more, but it's a very important topic. And it's a very challenging topic, because it really requires that we readdress what we think about tzniut very often, which people often think of as a very public thing, but actually the mitzvah d'oraita of tzniut is a very private thing, and there's a lot more to say about that, and the Mishnah Berurah has a lot to, you know, pass on these issues, how to get dressed in the morning, and to what extent it depends on, for example, the Mishnah Berurah says that when a person gets dressed in the morning, they should always put on their socks and take off their socks under the cover, so that their bare feet are never showing. And I remember when I was 19 or 20, I first read this, and I took this to one of my rabbeim, and I said, is this for real? Is that right? Do I have to take off my socks before I get out of them, put them on and take them off under the covers? And he gave me an answer, which was a very poor answer. He said to me, it's a madrega. It's a madrega. Now the Shulchan Aruch has been redefined as a madrega. Like, I thought when the Shulchan Aruch told me to keep Shabbos that he meant it. Not that it's a madrega. And one day I'll get there. You know, I always assumed that he meant it. It's not a madrega. He's saying it because he means it. So I only when I listen to the shirim of my Rosh Hashiva, Rav Berkovitz, I understand what's really going on here. He says that Mishnah Berurah is very careful to add on there. He says, because in our countries, it's scandalous to walk around the house in bare feet. He says. And if you walk around the house in bare feet because you think, who knows, who's ever going to know, who cares, I'll do something scandalous and no one's ever going to find out, that's exactly this halacha. But of course, says the Mishnah Berurah, if you live in a country where everybody walks around the house in bare feet, as much as a problem with that. Because it's entirely normal. It's like being in the shower with no clothes on, which is entirely tsanua and entirely normal, and people will be surprised if you did anything else. And therefore, there's a lot to say about this, but that's not for now. We need to go into the public sphere, because you need to say that first to understand the context of the public sphere. What goes on in public is a little bit different, because in the private sphere, of course, this is very subjective. What we've said so far is very subjective. But in the public sphere, that you can't have entirely subjective criteria. So if you look for a second, first of all, there is an important Gemara in Sota. So the Sota, without getting into a whole description of exactly what happens, but the Sota is a woman who has been accused of infidelity. We do not know if she did commit adultery or didn't commit adultery, but we do know that she's guilty of yichud, meaning she was warned, please do not lock yourself in a house with this particular guy, there's a suspicious rumor going along, and she said, get lost, and locked herself in the house with the guy and said, what are you going to do about it, basically. And now that's where you end up with the Sota situation. We don't know what went on behind closed doors, but we do know that she locked herself in the house. So it says there, if you look in number 9, Vehemid HaKoyin Et Ha'isha, Lifnei Hashem, the Kohen stands the woman before God, again this idea of Lifnei Hashem, very interesting, Ufara Et Rosh Ha'isha. And he, whatever this word Farah means, and I'm not giving a shir about head covering, we talked a little bit about that when we talked about colors. Remember this last September, August, whatever, before my daughter got married, we had some shir about weddings and colors. I'm not getting into all of the hair covering issues here, what that means. He unbraids the hair or uncovers the hair, whatever. He does something to her head, the Rosh Ha'isha. Fine. Not only that, but she's in, of course, a situation of public humiliation. The number 11, the Mishnah goes on to say, V'Kohen Oiches B'Vagadeha, the Kohen grabs her clothes, okay, Im Nikru'u Nikru'u, if they tear, they tear, Im Nifrumu Nifrumu, and if they come apart, they come apart, Ad Shehu Megaleh Et Liba, he uncovers her body as well, V'Soteh Et Sara, and undoes her hair. Now, again, exactly why this is happening, and who's doing it, and how's the Kohen allowed to do this, I'm not getting into all of this, but it's clear from the Parsha of the Sota is this woman is being publicly humiliated for all sorts of reasons. And the way they're doing it is they're uncovering certain parts of her body, her hair, and certain parts of her body itself, and that's considered to be a public humiliation. The halacha is learning out from here that therefore you learn that public dignified behavior, Rashi will learn that in number 10. So look at number 10, Mida'avina la hachi lanavla. From the fact that we do this to her in a public way to make her look undignified, midah keneged midah, this is like paying her back in a sense, kamosha after lahat lehitna'ot al bo'ala, just as she dressed herself up to commit, potentially, to commit adultery, michlal da'os, this implies that if this is the public definition of undignified, you can learn that the opposite is the public definition of dignified, meaning that there has to be somebody who is dressed in public, and this is all happening in public, has to be dressed in a way which covers certain parts of their body, and uncovering certain things is considered to be undignified. That seems to be a din d'oraisa. But it seems to be a din in dignity, not just a din in covering. It's an interesting question. You know, without getting into all the hair covering issues, let's say a person has to, there's a din, the person should cover their hair, a married woman should cover that in public. If she covers her hair with, or covers her whole self, or he covers himself with garbage bags from head to toe, black garbage bags, does that satisfy this halacha? The answer is no, it doesn't. The whole point is a person is meant to be in a public, dignified scenario, and again, I'm not getting into that so much to now. The question is, how do you define that from society to society? And this is where the minhag angle comes in. And the Gemara in Ksuvos picks up on this and introduces us to a concept called dat yehudit. Dat yehudit. Again, another misunderstood concept. Have a look at me in number 13 at what dat yehudit is all about. This is talking about a woman who loses her ketubah. As I think is well known, the man promises to pay the woman a ketubah in the event of death or divorce. If he misbehaves during the marriage in certain ways, then he has to divorce her and give her a ketubah and say, sorry, I've misbehaved, you can have all your money, financial settlement, you can go and marry someone else who's better than me. If she misbehaves and they get divorced, she loses her ketubah. So the Gemara needs to work out who loses and who doesn't lose their ketubah. So have a look at number 13. Elu yotzot shelo b'ketubah. The following women go out from the marriage and they lose their ketubah because they behaved badly, inappropriately. And he gives a list. Ha'overet al dat Moshe v'yehudit. Someone who breaks dat Moshe and someone who breaks dat Yehudit. Now, let's first of all define these words. What is dat? Religion. Dat is religion. In fact, the word dat first appears in the Tanakh, in Megillat Esther. Dat HaMelech. Okay? It doesn't appear in the Torah. It means laws, rules. It means rules. Das Moshe, the rules of Moshe. So fine, what's Das Yehudit? Jewish rules. Anything to do with Jewish women specifically? No, because Das is a feminine word and Yehudit is a feminine adjective. So Das Yehudit and Das Moshe just means Moshe's rules and Jewish rules. In fact, in some versions of the Mishnah, this appears not as Das Yehudit, but as Das Yehudim, which is very interesting. So the Gemara now defines them. Ezehi Das Moshe. What is Das Moshe? So these are all issues which are Torah breaches, where she is breaking Torah rules behind his back and affecting their marriage. Ma'achilito she'ein musa. She gives him food which has not had Trumas and Masas taken, and she doesn't tell him. She's basically feeding him trade food. U'b'shamashcha nida. She doesn't go to the mikveh. She tells him that she's going to the mikveh and she's not going to the mikveh. V'loy kotel achal. She doesn't take challah from the bread and she tells him she is. V'noderet ve'enu mekayemet. And she's making the darim and she's not keeping them. These are all things which affect them as a couple. Interestingly, he doesn't say that she's not careful with Hilchos Shabbos. At the end of the day, that's nothing to do with their relationship. The fact that she's not a tzadikah is not a reason for him to divorce her, any more than the fact that he's not a tzadik is a reason for her to divorce from him. She doesn't have to be a tzadikah, but if she's doing things which undermine their relationship and breaking Torah laws, that's called Das Moshe. The eighth is Das Yehudit. What is Das Yehudit? Yotz'ah v'rosha parua. She goes out with her hair uncovered. And the Gemara is immediately going to jump in and say, I don't understand. I thought that was a din from Sota. What's that got to do with Das Yehudit? That seems to be a din in the Torah itself. V'tova b'shuk. She weaves in the shuk. Without getting into all of the details, this is talking about a woman who's weaving in the shuk. And she's lifting her arms up in the air so that all her clothes are falling down and everybody can see all her arms. Umadaberet in kol adam. She speaks with all the people. The Gemara says, what's wrong with speaking to people? She can't speak to any other men now she's married? The Gemara says, of course she can speak to other men. The point is that she's flirting with all the young guys in public. That's what's going on. She's a flirt. Abba Shaul Omer, Afha Mekalelet Yoladav, Befanav, also somebody who curses his parents in front of him. Okay? She basically calls him this really interesting sound effect. Yes, very extreme. That's why these are listed as extreme. She curses his parents, means she calls him the son of whatever it is, and it's not very nice. And Rabbi Tarfon Omer Afa Kolanit, even a woman with a loud voice. The Eizik Kolanit, what, every woman with every Jewish woman with a loud voice gets divorced? That's going to cause problems. Says the Mishnah, no, it's not a question of how loud her voice is. When she's talking inside a house about issues which should be private between him and her, her neighbors can hear everything that's going on inside the house. She's screaming at him, he's screaming at her, she's talking about this, she's talking about that, and that's not appropriate. Now, Das Yehudit. How are we going to define Das Yehudit? The Torah here gives us objective Das Yehudit. These lists of things, whatever they are, she's flirting in public, she's talking about things inappropriately, etc. Look how Rashi defines Das Yehudit in number 14. Das Yehudit, says Rashi, Shenahagu benot Yisrael, af al gav de lo ksiva. Oh, and this is where our minhag comes in. Says Rashi, Das Yehudit is the minhag of benot Yisrael, of Jewish women, af al gav de lo ksiva, even though it's not written down anywhere. It's the local minhag of the way women behave. Look at the Rambam, he says a very similar thing. Look in the Rambam in number 16. Go over the page. Ezehi Das Yehudit. What is Das Yehudit? Hu minhag hat sniyut. He brings here in the word sniyut. Minhag hat sniyut. Shenahagu benot Yisrael. That the Jewish women have taken on as a minhag. What does this mean? What does this mean? How is this defined? So the way it works, which is absolutely fascinating, is as follows. It seems that there are objective rules of Das Yehudit that the Gemara lists, which might involve things like her uncovering her hair in different places, and the Gemara gets into a discussion as to where is it talking about. Is it talking about in public? No, because that was covered by the Sota. Is it talking about in private in the house? No, because there's no reason for a Jewish woman to cover her hair inside the house, because she's just there with her husband. It must be talking maybe about other places, and it gets into a whole discussion about a kalta. It says that maybe she covers her hair with a kalta, A kalta is some kind of a bag which just about covers the hair, but it doesn't look very nice and it doesn't cover all the hair. Says the Gemara, for the din d'oraita of hair covering, that's sufficient. But for dat yehudit, it's not sufficient. That's not dat yehudit. That's not covering the way, her hair in the way she should cover her hair, the way that's the minhag of Jewish women to cover the hair. And therefore, one has to ask these questions. Well, where do we find these minhagim from? How do we define these minhagim? And it turns out, actually, very interestingly, that there is a lot of subjective dat yehudit. What does that mean, subjective dat yehudit? Meaning, every society, there are rules that women set for themselves, and women should be setting for themselves. It shouldn't be the men who are giving them to the women. That's another problem. We'll talk about that in a minute. As to what is and what isn't considered appropriate behavior in public. For example, all of the rules of tzniut that people sometimes write down in books, which is almost self-contradictory, to have a book listing all the rules of tzniut, when Rashi said that these are the minhagim of societies, even though they're not written down. They're more organic. They're less definable in that way. And there was a very famous, somewhat infamous, notorious book written on Hilchos Tzniut by a very significant Talmid Chacham in England, listing all of the rules of Tzniut from head to toe, literally. And this book got a lot of people very, very unhappy. A lot of senior Rabbonim and Poskim very unhappy. One of my Rabbonim in London, who is a senior Poskim of a major shul in London, he said he wouldn't have that book in his house, he wouldn't have it in his library. Why? Because maybe it's well-meaning, but it seeks to define Tzniut by one community, and one community only, and you cannot define Tzniut that way, because they are minhagim that go across different communities in different ways. So, when it comes to anything other than these few objective things which are mentioned, it depends on the minhag ha-mokom. Anything like styles, colors, lengths, slits in skirts, all of these things that everyone gets very, you know, irate over, and these are important issues, they cannot be just defined in a list, because they depend on the society in which people live. I remember my wife once asked a Rav in London, actually the same one that got very upset about this book, and she said to him, she had a skirt with a slit in the bottom, below the knee, and she was getting a hard time by some of her friends about this at the time, and that was driving her a bit mad. And she called up the Rav. She says, I'm sick of this, I'm calling up the Rav. She asked the Rav, is it halachically mutter to wear, is it halachically acceptable to wear a skirt, she said, with a slit below the knee? With a slit, with a little part, I don't know, call it something else in America, I don't know. A slit below the knee. And he said to her, why not? You've got to be able to walk. Fine. About 3 weeks later, we received a letter, the whole community received a letter from the Rebbetzin of this community, not the Rav, saying just to clarify, I don't know if my wife was responsible for this or not, or they had a discussion about it, but we never knew, with it just saying, just to clarify that the accepted rules of sneers for the women in our community is no slits below the knee. Now, that's, in a sense, how it should be. Because the Rav was saying, look, in an objective sense, there's no halacha that says you can't have a slit below the knee. You can't write that down as an objective rule for all time for all people. It depends on the women of the community. What do they think is appropriate? And along comes the Rebbetzin and says, well, here's a list of what we think as women in this community is appropriate. I suppose if you don't like it, the answer is fine. So you join a different community. And this is where it becomes tricky, of course, because communities are not always easy to define. But this is the first very important point here. That these, that the dat yehudit means, apart from the very few objective dat yehudits which are listed in the Mishnah and the Gemara, dat yehudit means the minhag of that society. For example, is it appropriate for a woman to cover her hair wearing a sheitel or not? Well, in some communities, if you wear a sheitel, people will say, you're not covering your hair. That's not acceptable. In some communities, they'll insist that you have to wear a sheitel, and if you come wearing a scarf, then that's not sanua. So what are you going to do? The answer is, well, why are you interested in everybody else's minhagim? Whatever is the minhagim, your chabad, they wear sheitels, or whatever it is. If you're Sephardi, they don't. There are clear minhagim in many communities as to what is and what isn't appropriate. Now, the question is, what do you do when you visit communities? The same is true, by the way, of men. This is not, dat yehudit is not a women's thing. We used to have a whole discussion in yeshiva. I remember I was in yeshiva in Yerushalayim. Is it or is it not tanua for Haredi yeshiva boys to have short sleeves? Who's they? And this is exactly the point. In some communities, it's considered to be entirely appropriate. In some communities, it's an answer to be not kanua. That's Yehudit at work in the communities of men. Another question. Is it sanua for the rob of your community to go jogging in the park wearing sweatpants? To go jogging. Jogging in the park wearing sweatpants. Is that sanua? A man. Well, the rob in your community is a woman. That's another discussion. That's another discussion which we can have another time. But is it sanua for the rob, the man, the male rob of your community, to go jogging wearing pants in the park? Wearing sweatpants. Oh, why not? Because in some communities, exactly, in some communities, it's just not sanua. In some communities, the rav goes jogging, he's a kavod. He's a model to the community. Everybody should also go jogging in the park in the morning. So, you see, this is how tzniut works. It's like the Rashi said, like the Rambam said, it's the minhag in that place, even though it's not necessarily written down. And there are a million different applications of this. Don't ask me how long shekels have to be before it's not tzniut. It's a silly question. What is the minhag in your community? Tell me, work it out. And if there's no minhag, then there's no dat yehudit. Then the answer is, there doesn't have to be a dat yehudit about everything. But what's for sure is you can't make lists and hang them on lampposts and say, this is the minimum standards of whatever it is, because that doesn't mean anything, because what community is this talking about? And this is a really important point, which I think people often miss. There was a big hoo-ha in London a few months ago about the Belzer Hasidim and the fact that the women don't drive. So, right, there was a whole big discussion about it. So you had a number of people on the radio talking with great authority about the fact that there is no basis in halacha for this at all, and this is ridiculous, and these people should be, you know, whatever it is, approach. The answer is, excuse me, what happened to dat yehudit? Maybe these people have a dat yehudit that they don't consider it to be appropriate in their community to drive, meaning I don't agree with that, my wife doesn't agree with that, and fine, we don't belong to their community, we don't have to. But why are you giving them such a hard time if that's their dat yehudit? Now, there is always a possibility that it's not the dat yehudit, it's the men that are imposing rules on the women, telling them what they can and can't do. That's a problem. That's not how dat yehudit is meant to work. And one has to work out who is pulling the strings in these situations. But if it genuinely is the women of the community who've said, we don't consider it to be tzanua for women to drive, then who am I to criticize their dat yehudit? And it has complete basis in halacha. And it may well be then that in that community, if a woman does drive, that's a breach of dat yehudit. Yes. It was withdrawn. What do you mean what was drawn? Now they do drive? See, that's funny. They just all change their minhag? I mean, it was the men that suddenly made a fuss. Some men made a fuss about it. I would be interested to do an internal survey and find out who does drive and who doesn't drive.
I think the question is, based on what you just said, who decides
Das Yehudi? Rambam and Rashi are clear. The women. The women have to decide Das Yehudi. The women have to work out, just like my wife's situation of the shyness to the Rav, about the skirt. The Rav said, look, objectively, there's no halachic issue there. The women then said, we think that there is. Good. Yes, it should be the women, and I'm saying that I know it's open to abuse, and it could be that the men are being, you know, are acting in a...
But the men in the Haredi community, and this and that, they don't allow women to...
I don't know if that's true. I don't think women are so subjugated in all these communities that they do exactly what they're told. That's not my experience. Maybe I just have my own personal experience. Obviously, some people are, clearly. But as a community, I think the women make their view very clearly felt. No, there shouldn't be a vat. It changes organically. That's the point. It has to change organically. You know, you walk around the streets in Meir Shearim some years, and everyone's dressed in black and white. And then you come back 4 or 5 years later, and everyone's wearing colors. How did that happen? Halachically, how did that happen? The answer is, there was an organic change in the dat yehudit. And gradually, I suppose there were a few rebels at the edges pushing a little bit of pink here, a little bit of orange there, and eventually it turns into a, and it changes, and then it ebbs and flows. And actually the Talmud, the Gemara, when he wanted to introduce this concept, is brilliant, because it knows that it cannot define, it's not Hilchos Kashrus and Hilchos Shabbos, it's not Chukim, it cannot define from Sinai for all eternity what is and what isn't acceptable. It has to leave it to the communities themselves to work that out. And by the way, that has implications in halacha. For example, and you may think this is a bit strange, but this is how the halacha works. If a man is looking at a part of a woman's body that she's not meant to be showing, that she's meant to be covering, he has certain halachas of, can he say brachas, can he say brachas. So if you have a woman who's from a community where the daf yodid is to cover their arms to just below their elbow, and the whole of her lower arm is showing, then that's fine. That's 100% fine. That's the daf yodid. If I'm sitting there davening, whatever, I have no issue. If there's a woman from a community where the daf yodid is to cover to the wrist, if that's the daf yodid, and she decides to be a rebel and cover only to the elbow, I'm not allowed to say Kriya Shema in front of her arm. Because it's an erva. Tefach ve'isha erva. Tefach means a place where she's meant to be covered, which is not covered. But it depends on the community. How do I know? I don't know. That becomes really her problem, not my problem. But that's how it works in that sense. Yes?
When it says you have to cover your head, does that include the hair?
Good. I'm not getting into a whole discussion about head covering, because it says head. It's not just about hair, because the hair is a separate thing. It's about the dignity of the person in public. Absolutely. It's much more of a head thing than a hair. Now, we had a whole discussion about hair covering a little bit. We talked about that. Yes?
What's the rationale for a woman wearing a shekel and a hat?
That's your hoodie. That's a perfect example. That's a perfect example. Meaning, in terms of head covering, you covered your head. Leaving aside whether a shekel is good or not good, if it's hair, to cover hair. But why would they want to wear a little pillbox hat on top? Or a little doily, or a this, or a that? There's no rhyme or reason to it. It's a minhag.
Yes, there is a rhyme or reason.
A double covering? Dafka with this kind of hat.
Sephardim, if they wear shekels, they wear hats. There are Hasidim who wear shekels.
Sephardim women don't all wear hats. With all respect, that's not the reason why they wear the pillbox hat. The reason why they wear the hat is because that's the minhag. The minhag is the dignified way to married women to be in public, in their community, is to have that kind of head covering. And kol hakavod, good luck to them. I don't need to justify it in halacha, horse head, this. It's the minhag. And you have to respect minhagim and al tifrash minhag tzibur. Let's talk about a couple of other things. Yes.
You have an interesting thing right here in this room, and that is denim.
All of these things, all of these things. The problem is, if the girls have to be taught, because it's often a girl thing, although, by the way, if I walked in denim as a man around their showroom, I'd also get some funny looks as well. But it's all about people understanding that there's no objective din in denim. It's not that from Sinai somebody said that denim is not sanua, but wool is yes sanua. It's a din in minhag. It's the dati hood, and the dati hood can change. It can change in many ways. Oh, good. So let's talk about that now. How does that work? So go to source number 21. This is why the minhag angle is so critical, because it's much more subtle than people often think. First of all, the definition of what is in the community is more difficult than it used to be. Go back in, 200 years ago. You live in Minsk, you live in Pinsk, you live in Dvinsk. You know where you are. If you're in Minsk, you're in Minsk. If you're in Pinsk, you're in Pinsk. If you're in Pinsk, you're in Dvinsk. Now people don't live in geographical communities. People live in hashkafic communities, and they're not clearly delineated. And in many places there's no dat yehudit. And in some places it's ridiculous to ask, what's the dat yehudit in Harnof? Silly question. There are five or six different communities living in Harnof. There's an American Haredi community. There's an Israeli Haredi community. There's an Adati Luvian community. There's a Vishnit Chassidish community. There's all these kind of communities. They all have their own dat yehudit. You can't ask what's the dat yehudit, and they have their different ways of dressing and behaving in different ways. Sorry, the microphone's a bit unhappy today. So what if you visit a place? Look at number 21. So the Mishnah in Pesachim deals with this in the context of Erev Pesach. There were certain places where they did not do malacha in the morning on Erev Pesach. Also, we did talk about Pesach in the end, Baruch Hashem. So that's where Yotz. Malacha in the afternoon of Erev Pesach is a universal thing. There is an issue with performing malacha in the afternoon on Erev Pesach, because that was the zman of the Korban Pesach, and therefore Chazal said a person shouldn't involve themselves in work which you wouldn't do on Chol HaMoed, for example, clearing out the garage or mowing the lawns and that kind of thing on Erev Pesach in the afternoon. Cook you can do, don't worry. Anything for Yontzef you can do. And anything that you need for that day you can do, but you shouldn't get involved in a whole haystack of other things. But what about the morning? So the commissioner says, number 21, Makom shenagu lasad malacha ba'arvei pesachim ad chatzos. In a place where the minhag was that they did malacha in the morning before chatzot, and oisin. So you can do it. You can do malacha in the morning. Makim shenagash shaloi la'asot, ain't oisin. In a place where the minag was that they wouldn't do malacha in the morning, then they shouldn't, because you can't break with your communal minag. You can't do that. It has a status of a neder. We talked about this a little bit 3 weeks ago. Now, here's the golden question. What if you go from a place where they do malacha to a place where they don't do malacha? Or from a place where they don't do malacha to a place where they do. So what can you do? So the answer is, the Gemara says, you have to keep the chumras of the place that you left, the chumre makam sheh halach l'sham, and the chumras of the place that you are visiting. And the most important is, va'al yishama adam, no one should do something weird, mipnei machlokas, because it's going to cause a machlokas. So the Gemara analyzes, and he basically comes down with the following rules. He says, if you have a minag in place A, and you go and live in place B, and you live there permanently, and you've now cut your ties with place A, and you're now living in place B, then you drop all your old minhagim, and now you have the new minhagim, because you're in the new place. However, if you go somewhere just for a temporary amount of time, just zmani, and das olach zor, says the Gemara, your intention is to go back, so then you're in a bit of a pickle. Because on the one hand, you keep your old minhagim, because you're still basically rooted there. On the other hand, you have to adjust a little bit, so as not to cause a machlokas in the place that you're now visiting, because you're going to do something weird. So you have to find some kind of compromise solution, which on the one hand keeps your old minhagim, and on the other hand doesn't get people upset. This is why, by the way, when Israelis go to Chutz La'aretz, the second day Yontif in Chutz La'aretz, Israelis don't have to keep second day Yontif. They are coming back to Israel, they keep one day Yontif. If a group of Israelis all go together into the, I don't know, to the Rocky Mountains for Pesach in Montana, miles away from any Jewish community, they keep one day Yontif. No, finished. There's no second day Yontif. But if they go to a Jewish yeshuv, they go to a place where the Jews are keeping 2 days Yontif, so they have to keep second day Yontif. Not because they have to keep their second day Yontif, but because they can't go against the minhag of the place that they're now in. And since 1 day or 2 days is based on minhag, minhag avos ein biyadeinu, so then that's what they have to do. Now, so that's a machlokas when they're alone in their house, machlokas achronim, different people say different things. You'll get different psakim from different rabbonim depending on who you ask, whether they can check their emails when they're on their own or whether they can't. Okay, that's a separate question. But certainly in public, I've flown many times on second day Yontif here to Chutz La'aretz, to England. You get on the plane here in Israel, you land in wherever it is, Heathrow Airport, and it's second day Yontif. And the psak that I've always been given, as long as I don't go into a Jewish yeshuv, so I don't have to keep second day Yontif. Some people stay in the airport, some people, you know, will drive through the countryside and arrive. I've magically arrived in places like 10 minutes after Yontif, and like, where did you come from? Whatever. But it's you'll get different psakim from different people. Now, plug that into tzniut and minhag of das yehudit. So, if you're visiting a place, you don't turn into them. And they don't expect you to turn into them. If you go to Meir Sha'arim for Shabbat, you don't have to suddenly dress up. It's not Purim. You don't have to dress up like one of the locals, and they don't expect that. Any more than if you go to a kibbutz dapi for Shabbat, you don't have to put on a, you know, a pair of shorts and sandals and a covered temple or whatever it is. I know that's not what they wear on Shabbat. Fine. But whatever. You know, but you don't have to get dressed up like a kibbutznik. But if you go there permanently, I'm not so sure. In either direction. Meaning, if you move from the kibbutz dati to Meir Sha'arim, I don't think you can walk around like a kibbutznik in Meir Sha'arim. Because that's not the minhag gemak, that's not the dati yudit. And by the same token, if you're from Meir Sha'arim and you go live on a kibbutz, you can't keep walking around like you just walked out of Meir Sha'arim. That's not tsanua either. By our definition of tsniut, to be walking around with a long black coat, a big black hat, and a kibbutz dati, zelo tsanua. Who do you think you are? That's not the definition of tsniut. And therefore, there's going to have to be a shift. However, when you're going to visit, you're going to have to find some way of on the one hand, keeping your minag, on the other hand, not upsetting other people. When I have students who go visiting places for Shabbos, and we try and prep them, you know, if you're going to Bnei Brak for Shabbos, again, you don't have to turn into a Bnei Braka, but you do have to maybe adjust a little bit so you're not going to get people upset. That's the Ahavta L'Rechav Kamocha that I talked about earlier. It's a basic halacha of consideration for other people. It's sometimes tricky. Let's say you wear a shekel, and you go to a wedding where people don't wear shekels. Okay? Or the other way around. Or you wear a hat. It's actually more this way around. You wear a hat, and you go to a wedding where if you wear a hat at the wedding, it's like you didn't get dressed for the wedding. Everyone else is in a shekel. I went to a wedding the other about 6 months ago in Brooklyn. There were about 900 people there, and everyone was wearing a shekel, which must have been worth at least $10,000. I turned around to someone and said, "There's like $2.5 million of shekels in the room here." Okay, so let's say you don't wear that's not your minute to wear a shekel. You may even hold. So what do you do? You're not going to wear a shekel because you don't wear a shekel. On the other hand, you're not going to walk into a wedding hall looking as though you didn't get dressed for a wedding. So that's exactly what it's saying. You're going to have to find some way of adjusting it so that it fits for you, but it also fits for them. It takes a lot of thought. That's why, by the way, I didn't put it on the sheet, the word snuim in the Mishnah is referring to people who are chachamim and medaktikim. That's how the word is used, snuim. It's nothing to do with this particular issue. People who are tsanuim, it's people who think through issues and take them seriously and focus on the details as well as the general issues. So this is a difficult thing to define. In a way, almost today, it's a question that if you were a card-carrying member of the community, what would the minhagim of that community be? And again, it may not be so defined. There may be no, you don't have to have a dasi hooded for everything. Sometimes it's very clear. If you're a rabbi in Hanov, you can't walk around in a Hawaiian shirt and Bermuda shorts. You can't work, that's not how it works. Because there's a breach of dasi hooded. Okay? And in other places, maybe you can. If you're a rabbi in Honolulu, I don't know what goes on there. Probably also wear a black hat and a long black coat as well in Honolulu. So I think that we have to, this whole issue of tzniut is a much bigger issue generally, but this, getting clear this issue of minag, of dasi hooded, that there are certain objective rules given in the Mishnah, but then beyond that there are many, many subjective ones. That is very critical. Yes?
You mentioned jogging.
Yes. I don't think it's sneers. I think it's more the societal norms that they're. Yeah, look, and first of all, it's not necessarily true. Yeah, but I don't know if it's in terms of dignity. Meaning, I think the reason that people do different things for different reasons. Meaning, sometimes people do something because that's what their community does. Sometimes people do things because that's not what the other people do. I think that there are certain issues of sport that maybe there's a whole culture, certainly in the Haredi yeshiva world, which is trying to be not like the outside world. Which is not this, it's not that they don't play sport, it's just that they don't play sport. If you know what I mean. You know what I mean? One of my Rosh Yeshiva once put it to me in a slightly tongue-in-cheek way. He says, he was a Haredi Rosh Yeshiva in a well-known place in Yerushalayim. And he said, why don't the Haredi Rishivas plant trees on Tubishvat? Plant trees on Tubishvat. Why don't the old kids go out and plant trees? It's a mitzvah. The Orachaim in the Torah says it's a mitzvah. Everybody thinks it's a choshev azach. So he said, well, maybe we don't plant trees on Tubishvat because all the other guys do plant trees on Tubishvat. And he was not happy about that. And then he turned around and he said, Baruch Hashem, the other guys, whoever the other guys are, don't sit and learn Gemara all day, otherwise what would we do? And he was being a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but therefore I think that's part of the answer to your question. Sometimes you have to define yourself, and that means not doing what other people do, but I think that actually a lot of, in America, the American yeshiva guys play a lot of sport. A lot of sport. It's an Israeli thing. I think Israelis generally are a bit less into the sport, even in the Datsunimi yeshivas, I'm not sure they're so into sport. Yes. That's why I said at the very beginning, V'ahavta l'reicha kamocha, and bein adam l'chaveru mitzvahs are an essential part of this topic, essentially because it's so sensitive, and people take things very personally, and one has to be ultra careful as to how to deal with it. But in abstract terms, to understand the structure is very important because that will help people to understand what people do, what people should do, and what people don't do. Let us leave it there, and next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, we will work our way into kidney ops, which I'm sure will get people even more excited than Tziyot.